Welcome to Alaska Radio Reader Rambler. I'm Sandy Harper here with my co-host Dick Reichman. And if you're 25 years old, you probably might have thought the pack has always been here. However, that same year you were born, in 1988, besides the Alaska Center for the Performing Arts, there was an explosion of important births, including the Anchorage Museum of History and Art, the Egan Center, the Sullivan Arena, and the Lusac Library. And you, of course. But we're here today to especially celebrate the 25th anniversary of the PAC, and our special guest is Nancy Harbor, who is the president of the Alaska Center for the Performing Arts and is the go-to person for all things arts in the state of Alaska. Her fingerprints are everywhere as a generous mentor and her service to a myriad of boards and organizations. You name it, Nancy was probably involved in some way. Happy birthday, PAC, and congratulations to you, Nancy, for your countless contributions, savvy, and sense of justice for all, and the importance of the arts for all. So, welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here. Wow, that's quite an introduction, my friend.
He deserved one.
Thank you.
And I'm thinking maybe we could start off with some of the inside stories and the back stories that only you know.
Well, I have lots of those, and, you know, some I can't tell you at all because people will come and get me. But there are probably a few. And admittedly, my staff are much, much more filled with those kinds of stories because they're the ones that are there 24 hours a day.
Right. There is somebody there 24 hours a day.
Well, not quite, but it seems like it, you know.
Well, you know, in a few days, it's actually going to be Halloween.
Yes.
So maybe you'd like to share a ghost story.
Well, there are lots of ghost stories about the PAC. Most center around Sidney Lawrence because there are lots of superstitions associated with the fact that the Sidney Lawrence Auditorium was torn down in order to build the PAC. And for the construction period underway when the building was built, there was this hope that they could save at least the stage house from the old Sidney Lawrence. But you can imagine the Sidney Lawrence Auditorium was built in 1951, and codes and building requirements and et cetera were pretty different by 1985 when ground was broken for the PAC. And so eventually they determined after many trials that they couldn't save the entire stage house. There is one I-beam of steel that is in the upstage wall of the Sidney Lawrence Theater. And so that we hope, but I can tell you that whenever something goes weird, my staff will say, Sidney's not happy this week or something to that effect. Wendy Oden, who is the production manager in the Sidney Lawrence last week, explained to me that our new dimmer system that is in the building, we spent all summer with construction going on to upgrade the lighting systems. For some reason, during a show last week, her board went all weird and kept repeating and repeating lighting cues that weren't even in the board. And she was in my office explaining this to me. And of course, I looked at her strangely and I went, Sidney, right? She said, yep. So
he did not operate a computer.
No, but, you know, I think anything that he can mess with, he does as the ghost.
Nancy,
there have been lots of stories like that around Sidney and the Sidney Lawrence Theater.
Was the Sidney Lawrence Theater actually based and floor plan on the old theater? I was not here long enough to have been in the old one, but someone told me that that odd angle of the stage represented the old Sidney Lawrence.
If that was the case, I have not heard that. I think that, I'm always interested in how architects make decisions about how stages are situated. But I don't think that sort of off-center stage in the Lawrence really had anything to do with the auditorium, because the Sidney Lawrence Auditorium, that was sort of the go-to place for obviously 30, 50 years before that, was pretty straight on. I mean, it had, I don't remember, honestly, there are lots of people out there who probably do, whether it had aisles left and right, but I do remember going to see the rep for many, many years in that hall, and there was no asymmetry about it that I recall. So
this is part of the design of the new PAC.
Exactly. I think, one of the challenges that the Performing Arts Center faced in its design process is that originally it had to fit on a block between F and G. And, you know, a building that's supposed to have four facilities, because there was a black box that got scratched because of the financial over-budgetness that... Did you just hear me make up that word?
I know what it means, Barb.
Yeah, exactly.
I've heard that thought before.
Yeah, right. But it had to be all sort of scrunched on a block because Town Square Park had already been put in play. So now, as it turns out, the lobby ended up where F Street used to be. But so I think a lot of the design of the theaters came as a result of trying to make them fit into. And that's honestly why there's so many stairs in the lobby.
Oh.
That's all the connectivity of those theaters that then, you know, you had to get from one side to the other. And that's why there's so many stairs.
Mm. Well, you know, I actually arrived in Anchorage in 1988. And I know how thrilling it was to have this new facility. And all the major carpet controversy, I remember that.
Yep. It definitely was a controversy. It still is a point of conversation, mm-hmm. which I really love. I mean, obviously, I love the carpet. I'll never forget the day that Tom Tomlinson, who the original president, and I had these huge carpet rolls delivered to the unfinished theater lobby. And they were probably 9 foot tall, these rolls of carpet. And we both leaned on the carpet and pushed and out came these poppies, and we looked at each other, and we both said, "Oh, isn't this gorgeous?" And I'm not sure that would have been our initial impression, but it all makes sense given the interior park that the design of the lobbies are all about. So that's why you sit on park benches and lean on park rails and walk through fields of poppies. So it all was intentional. And I love the poppy carpet. I think Nancy Taylor Stonington, who designed it, was genius in putting something very contemporary in that building.
And cheerful.
Oh, very cheerful. Yeah. I remember this is an indication that it is not normal. I remember when Ms. Kitty Dukakis came for a election speech on behalf of her husband, and she spoke in the Performing Arts Center lobby. And needless to say, the Secret Service had been there for 24 hours. It's a very complicated building, and it has all kinds of hidden spots. So they were wandering all over the building, checking things out, and I was assigned to one of the agents during that time, and we took the freight elevator up to the public space in the lobby and got out. And he said to me, "My gosh, this is the most ridiculous carpet I've ever seen. I think it should be gray." And I said, "Well, that's what Secret Service people are supposed to say, you know."
Nondescript.
Exactly. Easy to describe. You know, we're supposed to hide in plain sight, these people. So it wasn't going to happen at the PAC.
So you really were there from day one.
You know, there were actually quite a few days before I got there in June of 88. And, mm-hmm. of course, all of the last finishing touches were put in during that last 3 to 3.5 months.
We're talking to Nancy Harbor, who's president of the Performing Arts Center in Anchorage.
Yes. The concert hall didn't open until December of that year. But there was a lot of work. Unusually, most performing arts centers have staff on site for a year or so before, so they can develop educational programs and that kind of stuff. But this was a very unique situation because so many of the wonderful arts organizations that use the PAC were, 30 years old then. So they didn't need to do that.
So, yeah, in fact, you have resident companies.
We do.
And so that's great. You know, you can name some of the wonderful companies.
We have 10 resident companies that are currently producing, presenting, and then starting next season, Anchorage Contemporary Ballet joins the throes as the 11th company. But at the beginning, what they really just do is get access to next 13, 14 season dates. No, 14, 15. Your calendar
must be really complicated.
It's kind of crazy. But yeah. So the Concert Association, the Anchorage Opera, the Anchorage Symphony Orchestra, those are what I call the big three, and then Alaska Junior Theater, speaking of Halloween.
Yes.
and let's see, Alaska Dance Theater, Alaska Theater of Youth. We just had a birthday party with them this past weekend. We've been doing birthday parties with all of our resident companies. So lots of little tiny cupcakes have been popped into mouths, and it's been a really great time. And we're very thrilled that Perseverance Theater, who obviously comes from Juneau, is a resident company as well. So Concert Chorus just finished their St. John's Passion concerts this weekend. I'm sure someone will yell at me if I've forgotten somebody, but they are the group that put the majority of events on the stages.
And so, it's what makes Anchorage an exciting cultural city and really adds to the quality of life here.
I agree. And there's lots of stuff that happens outside of the PAC that's really important. There is that little theater company over on D Street, too, which we all enjoy.
Oh, thank you. Well, you know, you've been connected with the arts. In fact, you had something to do with the Wendy Williamson before, right?
You know, that was my first job. When I came to Alaska in 77, January 77, I applied as the administrative assistant to the then director of what was arguably the ACC, Anchorage Community College Performing Arts Center. And Ev Kent, who was the first director, hired me as his administrative assistant because at the time I could type 70 words a minute. So type, don't you? It's sort of crazy. But I was part of that, what I consider to be family group that originally ran that facility. It was Ev, myself, Ira Perman was the permanent house manager.
Is that right?
Michael Hood, who went on to be the head of the College of Arts and Sciences, was the stage manager. Norman Vaughn, our favorite musher, was one of the custodians. A gentleman named David Marburg was the publicist. So there was this really wonderful group of people that ran that facility. It was before the Department of Theater and Speech. That was evolving. Before I left the university, I had moved over to CAS and was in that building, even though we were still running what was then, what is now Wendy Williamson. So I remember rewiring pin connectors on lighting instruments and all of that kind of stuff back then.
I didn't know you were a Renaissance woman in that way.
Oh, well,
Nancy.
You know, I don't.
You do what you have to do.
Yeah, exactly. And that was it. That was it. I actually was a props person in the summertime during the summer shows. So, you know, we all do what we have to do.
Actually, I think props are fun.
I do, too.
Your inner Nancy Drew. Finding
I had to go find six sinks for the owl and the pussycat. So,
successfully, I presume.
Yes, definitely.
Well, you know, I know you also as members of many, 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 many boards.
I'm trying to get off too many, but yes, I have been. It's very hard for me not to participate with other groups because I find it really energizing. I was on the Anchorage Convention and Visitors Bureau board, now Visit Anchorage. I was on that board for about 9 years, and I now am very honored to serve as a member of the State Arts Council, having been on the other side of that sort of relationship between arts organizations and the state
both
agency.
Both sides of the table.
Yeah, it's really been interesting. I really admire the people that I've met over the years through that process. So, and, you know, I've helped and enjoyed being part of lots of different groups. I just finished the Mayor's Charity Ball, so
Nancy Harper is our guest. She's president of the Performing Arts Center here in Anchorage. And Nancy, what are you doing for the 25th? Anything special?
As I mentioned, we are doing birthday parties with all of our resident companies. We've already had one with the Concert Association, and at the symphony performance last month, we had this great party. It was lots of fun. So we're doing that throughout the season, and we are trying to make it well known to everybody that this is our 25th year. We're doing a little promotion on it's called 2 for 25, which is every month, and we have a Facebook contest. And if you are the winner, you get two tickets to a performance. Thankfully, our resident companies have been very generous, and a dinner at Orso, who is one of our really wonderful partners.
Ooh, so there's incentive,
everybody, go on Facebook and pay attention to the question that I think Jaina Combs, who's my director of development, is creating these relationships for the 2 for $25. And so we're doing a lot of that kind of thing, just wanting to be top of mind for people. And so you see lots of signage and lots of little contests like that. So.
Yeah.
That's primarily.
I love the Performing Arts Center. And, you know, in fact, that's why Cyrano's is called the Off-Center Playhouse.
I
it's
know.
A takeoff.
I love
on that.
I've always loved that. You know, we are symbiotically connected, you know.
Definitely.
For
in
sure.
many, many ways. Now, I'd like to know a little bit about the lounge. I was in the lounge for the first time recently because one of my friends was a member.
Wonderful.
I didn't realize how wonderful that was.
Yes, that is, you know, one of the things that is essential for arts organizations everywhere is that you receive private contributions. And even though we are under contract to the city to manage their building, that's our relationship, our organization receives only about 50% of our operating money from the municipality. And I consider it a contract for service. And all of the remainder, our budget's about $2.5 million, and all the rest of that we either have to earn, which we do from rent and our ticket fees, et cetera. But it also is wonderful to create relationships with donors. And all of our major donors, membership in the Patron Lounge is one of the benefits of being
a
$500 donor or above. So,
yeah.
And it allows people to go in and have a quick glass of wine and some salty things before they go into a performance. And then we're open during the intermission period as well. So we have lots of members and we'd love lots more.
And I know that you also created Cinertix, which is a wonderful thing.
Thank you. You know, it was one of those things that kind of drove me crazy. We had a wonderful relationship with the Carr family and Carr's Quality Centers for years. They helped us create the first computerized ticketing system based on their tandem computers back in '88. And over time, our relationship evolved and was still wonderful. They created a PC-based system. So really, Carr's Ticks was its own cost center within Carr's Quality Center. When Carr's sold to Safeway, the ticketing system became, you know, owned by Safeway. And I remember getting a phone call from a Safeway employee out of Bellevue, Washington one day, and he said to me, "What's a Carr's Ticks?" And so I said, "Well, if you look closely, it's probably a very lucrative cost center within your budget." And honestly, it was really great, except for Safeway is a very big corporation that has lots of centralized stuff. So, you know, over a period of time, they decided that they didn't want to be a ticketing company, so they sold the company to Tickets.com, which is a national firm, it's a little bit smaller than Ticketmaster. But they laid off all the employees and transferred the call center to California. And in my opinion, the customer service went down the tube like overnight. Mm. And our contract with Tickets.com was for 4 years. So within that 4 year period, my staff and I tried to work really hard to figure out how to bring ticketing back to Anchorage. So, you know, I think I wrote 4 business plans before my board, you know, finally said, okay, I think this is going to fly. We put it out to bid and decided to start our own. So Cinertix came to pass and it's went live July 2005. We've never looked back, and it's been very good for us because we've employed, at least, I don't know, we have 4 full-time employees and probably 10 or 15 part-time employees, all who are in our building, so they know where the theaters are.
Yeah, literally in-house.
They've seen where people sit. They understand when you're calling what we're talking about. So that's been great. And the revenue that we've got from it, which all went outside before, stays in our budget now. So that's really been helpful for us. And our fees still are less than they were when Tickets.com were here. So we
How
wanted
long did
to
Tickets.com run it? It was just a short time, wasn't it? Or was it?
Say that again.
How long did they run it, Tickets.com?
4 years.
For 4 years?
Yeah.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah. So and in that 4 years, we saw significant drop-off in attendance because people had challenges with just getting tickets. So it's really been, I can't tell you how many compliments we get from Center Tickets. And I honestly give it all the credit to those ticket sales associates who answer the phone and help people at the window. And amazingly, people, the first show we did after we went live was a Whistling Swan production. And 82% of the tickets were printed at home, which, you know, was not a phenomenon that we had ever seen. And even more interesting is that when the Dave Chappelle show happened a few weeks ago, it's not, you know, it's a young audience that came, and we see that all the time. But this year, we our platform had been upgraded, and now we can scan your tickets right off your cell phone.
Is that right?
Yeah. And the Dave Chappelle
show. The millennials were like that.
Well, and that's, you know, there were a lot of millennials at Dave Chappelle. And we had over 50% of two sold out houses bring their tickets on their phones. So times they are a changing, folks, which is great.
That's something my generation would never do. They wouldn't trust that phone to work.
It's so true. But these kids obviously do everything on their phones. And admittedly, I use my phone pretty much the same way. I don't ever print an airplane ticket anymore. I just put it on my phone. And so I think, you know, it really has changed. Mm-hmm. And I'm very proud that we're doing our best to stay abreast of that change.
Well, Nancy, your leadership has been extraordinary.
Thank you.
You've always been ahead of the curve in so many ways.
I certainly have people who help me be there. So.
Well, that's another reason you're a good leader. You're very collaborative and very considerate of your staff.
They're very good at what they do.
Right. You know, someone once told me this story, and I don't know if it's true or not, but I love it. The very first attraction at the Performing Arts Center was supposed to have been Count Basie. And since you guys are brand new, he didn't want to take a check. And you guys, he wanted cash. And do you know the story?
Oh, yes, I know this story.
Why don't you tell the story?
As you may remember, when the concert hall was finished, the gala grand opening was in mid-December. And the opening act was Jay Leno and Diane Schur and the Count Basie Orchestra. And we had a dinner beforehand for major donors to that event. And, you know, champagne was served to everybody. We had a laser light show. It was basically this big, huge gala. And Count Basie is one of those bands that likes to be paid in cash. And Mark Seward, who was the production manager at the time, we were, you know, there were 1,000 details that we were taking care of. And I remember it well because we were sitting in the lobby, the show was underway, and we were, Tom and Mark and I were sitting there, you know, just going, okay, well, we've gotten this far in the evening, now what's next? And Mark Seward looked at us both and went, oh my God. And we, you know, we were like, what's the matter? And he said, I forgot to get cash for the band. And it was significant 5 figures. I mean, a lot of money. And oh my gosh, it was a horrific undertaking because he would not take the stage. The band would not take the stage without being paid. So needless to say, we were running around trying to find cash. And we didn't have that kind of cash in the ticket office. And, you know, we have lots of friends in town. And we started making phone calls. Obviously, Greg Carr, who was then the chair of our board, we thought, oh, well, the go-to place has got to be the grocery stores. Well, Carr's does not keep cash. They, you know, they have these trucks that come and get cash, you know, I don't know, 4 or 5 times a day. So when we'd gone to the patriarch of that family and said, we need this kind of cash. And he just looked at us like, I don't have that kind of cash. So in fact, I won't tell you where, but we got the cash.
Oh, you're not going to tell the where. That's my favorite part of the story.
Suffice it to say that there has been over the decades a traveling poker game. And we ultimately made a couple of phone calls and found the cash as a result of the poker game.
It's a famous poker game.
It's a famous poker game. I'm not going to tell you whose famous poker game, but thankfully they saved our bacon that night. We would never have been able to make it happen otherwise.
I love that.
It was a really, really horrible idea that night, but it has been a very charming story since. We just don't tell it very often. Now everybody's going to know.
Yes, right.
So.
Well, you know what else might be interesting, too, is maybe it is radio, so maybe you could paint an audio picture of a virtual tour, a backstage tour, you know, where people don't get to go that often.
Sure.
And that would be kind of fun.
Well, I think that there are lots of places to go behind the scenes. We have tried a couple of times to have open houses where people have been able to come. We actually, one year, rigged people up and flew them across the Atwood stage.
Wow.
And it was very fun. But if you come, there's a keypad door right next to the ticket office on the town square side of the building. And when you go through that door, you will see from the signage now, because we have new sort of wonderful signage, we wrapped that door in the new marketing vernacular in honor of Dr. Robert Wilkins, who was the founder of the Anchorage Concert Association in the early 50s, I think actually in 1950. And the celebrity wall is named after him, and rightly so. But we try to have every artist who performs at the center sign the celebrity wall. And it goes through that hallway to the stage right door of the concert hall, and then down the other side towards the Discovery and the Sidney Lawrence. And you pop out in an area right sort of between Kaladi Brothers and the Cargostin Lobby. So that celebrity wall is very special. And there are lots of signatures. As you may know, I love cello music. So when Yo-Yo Ma was here with Jeff Kahane, that little, I know where that signature is. And so there are 100, let's see if I get this right. My staff's going to yell at me if I don't. But there are over 100 dressing room spots throughout the below grade area. There are wardrobe rooms. There are
Sometimes it's kind of a labyrinth down there.
Sometimes
the actors can't find the stage.
No, you're absolutely right. We have green rooms and production offices, and the walls are still painted sort of that mauve color from the original days, because there's really no reason to change it. So it kind of looks like a hospital from the 30s. So if you get lost, you're lost. And I tell people all the time, if you're lost, just stop and read the signs, because you know how it is. You get so used to signs, you don't read them anymore. Mm-hmm. But almost all of them are very clear about where you need to go. Like one will say, stage right, Lawrence. And you go, oh, okay, I know where I am now. Anyway, it's easy to get lost, but it is intriguing. And we do give backstage tours. So if somebody wants one there, all they need to do is call us and we'll try to accommodate.
Especially this 25th year of the wonderful Performing Arts Center. Nancy, it's been such a pleasure to have you here today, and we thank you so much.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Here's a toast to 25 more at least, probably more, much more than that, really.
Let's hope.
Thank you all for joining us again for Alaska Radio Rita Rambler, and we hope you join us again next month for another episode.